sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And today we're going to be pondering the question, what do Sigmund Freud, Carl Jung, Montauk Chia, and John Maxwell Taylor have in common when it comes to sacred sexuality? My guest today is John Maxwell Taylor. And he has over 40 years' experience in spiritual self-transformation. He's a longtime student of the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, the Russian mystic Gurdjieff, Carl Jung, and Taoist master Montauk Chia. He is internationally known for his award-winning portrayal of Jung in his one-man play, Forever Jung. And John was a member of the performing arts group at Findhorn, the pioneering spiritual community in Scotland. He's also the creator of two Broadway-style musicals, has worked with Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice, and as a Paris-based rock and roller, his bands opened for the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and he also played for Queen Elizabeth on the Royal Variety Show at the London Palladium. His ever-popular book, The Power of I Am, now in Spanish, Russian, and Chinese versions, continues to receive worldwide attention and acclaim. And his latest book, which I have here in my hot little hands, is called Eros Ascending, The Life-Transforming Power of Sacred Sexuality. And it was a 2010 USA Best Book News Award winner. So, John, welcome to my show. It's wonderful to have you here.
I'm delighted to be with you, Laura. I've been looking forward to this.
You have such a wide base of experience. I mean, playing, opening for the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, not to mention the Queen, and then studying with Montauk Chia, and from your book also Margot Anand and even Mare Simone. I mean, you have incredible, vast grasp of psychology and sacred sexuality and spirituality, all of the above, yeah?
Yeah, so I think this multifaceted diversity probably stems from the fact that I'm a Gemini, and someone said of the typical Gemini, he jumped on his horse and rode off in all directions.
<That's> great.
and someone asked Peter Ustinov, who spoke 17 languages and was an actor and a playwright and an author and many other things, they said, how can you do so many different things? And he said, well, one activity refreshes me for the next.
Wow, it's amazing. You have to have a lot of energy.
Well, yeah, you do, because, you know, you only have a certain amount of energy in your brain for doing mental work, and then when that kind of runs out, then you switch to something that you use your emotional energy or your physical energy. So I know how to keep kind of shifting gears, so I'm constantly cycling energy through my system to remain charged up, you know. People often say, gosh, I never met anybody with as much energy as you know, or I never met anybody so comfortable in their skin. And I think if you're not comfortable in your own body, then it's hard to have access a lot of energy, but you know, being creative makes us like the creator, made
exactly.
In the image of. So I just love to be multifaceted. My father would say, jack of all trades, master of none, you know, but in California I was a multifaceted entrepreneur, so can't go wrong, really.
It's great. I love that your interests are so diverse. I read in your book a little story about meeting the lead guitarist for Elvis and how that was your idol at some time, and that, you mean, you had an experience of direct transmission
right.
of guitar lick
right.
and guitar composition, maybe.
Well, it was more than that. It was James Burton, who had been the guitar player for Ricky Nelson, then became Elvis's guitar player. And I just loved his guitar style because it was very musical. It sang in a very sweet way, but it also had an edge to it when it needed to be. And a friend of mine, Sonny Curtis, who was written many number one songs, took me to see James Burton playing in a club. And afterwards, we were standing around and he put his arm around me, and he just kind of talked, not really about music so much. But when you're with someone who's got a certain thing down pat, that's their magic thing that they do, you can get an energy transmission from that person. It's like a darshan of a saint. This was a musical darshan, right? When I picked up my guitar the next day, although he didn't show me any licks, man, I was all over the place on that guitar. I never thought I could play like that. You just catch the magic. And I think that's what happens with people like you who are a teacher in this realm. I'm sure that when people who don't know too much about sacred sexuality or whatever come in contact with you, something shifts for them.
Absolutely.
They pick it up by osmosis.
Even if I just look at them, I mean, even if we don't even have a conversation or if I don't touch them or anything, I mean, sometimes someone's just in my presence and I look at them in a certain way and something shifts. So it's true. I'm sure it happens around you as well.
I do understand that process. And, Gurdjieff said that, when everybody's really asleep, they're all being run by their past programming and so forth and hypnotized by the senses. So the vast majority of the human race is actually in a waking trance, consensus trance. But when you look at people a certain way, as you were describing, what happens is the reality of your being, which is always awake, looks through the trance, and the person, the being that's behind that programming, all of a sudden it falls away, and there can be a moment where there is pure seeing, and in that moment the energy transmission is a teaching. It may not be in words. It's the awakening look, the soulful gaze. This is why lovers need to spend time soul gazing at each other. The last thing Emily and I do, my wife and I do, before we go to bed at night, we have a dimmer switch. And after we've cuddled and everything, we lie in bed and we gaze into each other's eyes as the light goes down.
Beautiful. Well, you're kind of jumping ahead because I just need to let you know because I am going to get to, I want to ask you questions about lovers.
Yes,
you know
anything
what I mean? But first, I want to talk about Freud. I can't necessarily say that he was a lover, although I do know that Carl Jung was a lover.
Well, I think
Wilhelm Reich,
I think Freud was a wannabe lover. the fact that he, the difference between Jung and Freud is Freud felt that our problems all stem from the suppressions of our libido, our unintegrated sexuality, and so forth. We're damping everything down. What the difference was that Jung felt that our problems stemmed from our failure to recognize and integrate our spiritual natures, from the suppression of our souls. And when Jung and Freud would get into conversations about the deepest aspects of life, bordering on the mystical experience and so forth, Freud would pass out.
Wow, because Freud was pretty a high controller, and so Freud probably just didn't want to be so challenged by that or even take a look at what Jung was talking about.
Right, and that's why their friendship broke up, because they were interpreting each other's dreams, and Freud says, no, I can't tell you about that. And Jung said, why not? He said, it would be bad for my authority. And Jung said, I knew then I could no longer go down the same road with him, because if he cared more for his own authority than the truth, then I was out of there.
When I was first donning my feminist cloak, I really was against Freud for a while, even though I was a psychology major and was fascinated by Freud. But when I was part of the women's movement, I just felt like I couldn't go for Freud's information anymore. And then when I became tantric, which I still am, of course.
Yes.
I said, Freud was really right, even though I tried to suppress that in myself. Mm-hmm. He was right about a lot of things. And so I had to relook at all of it. Tantra made my life regroup and click back like dominoes, click, 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 click back everything that perhaps I had changed in certain notions. Because Tantra exploded so much inner knowledge, so much discovery that no one told me about in advance, that I couldn't know about, things my teacher, my tantra teacher, no teachers ever told me about, things I had possibly read about or maybe hadn't read about. The opening was so profound. that I had to go back and revisit everything that I had protested against, everything that I had, I don't know, I just had to reexamine everything in light of the new paradigm. And
lucky you.
Open more to everything, right. You know, to include it all, as opposed to shut anything down.
Well,
anything bad, you know.
Yes, I think part of that may tie into the fact that the lower centers of our body, what they call the three lower chakras, from the navel downwards, they're connected to the unconscious mind.
Right.
And the upper ones, of course, are to the more mystical celestial realms. But in order to be a successful human being on this planet, everything needs to be opened up. And a lot of us trying to negotiate through society from childhood to teenager and coping with these desires that come up within us, a lot of that thing does get stuffed into the unconscious and so forth. And it takes a lot of energy to keep the lid on the trash can. Right? So when you finally have an awakening and you lift that lid off and you go in there and you shine a light in that lower part of your body, you know, what happens is, you know, love shines a light on everything. The good and the bad and the ugly and so forth.
Mm-hmm,
and when it's done in the right way, everything becomes converted and becomes the servant of your soul. But because I have a deep understanding of the unconscious and how it drives human behavior, that allows me to be compassionate towards people when they're being obnoxious, because I can see that they've been being driven by, doesn't mean I will tolerate it, mind you, but I can see that they've been driven by forces that they do not understand. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. How can someone who's being driven by mechanical behavior be held responsible for it? We need to be conscious, first of all.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question now. Were you all about this unconscious stuff before you played Carl Jung? I mean, or was your was your notion about Carl Jung what drove you to you wrote the play that you started, Carl Jung? You were a guitar player. How did this?
Well,
this
I was an oddball guitar player, because I was never wild. You know, people think rock musicians wild and everything, but, you know, when I was in France, for example, touring, I would go off to Joan of Arc's birthplace or to the great cathedrals. When we came to a town, when we were on tour, you know, they would all go off to the bars and the brothels, and I'd go to these places, you know. I played in the top 10 club on the Hamburg, in Hamburg on the Reeperbahn, and I'm probably the only British rock musician who ever played there and didn't get laid, you know, because I had I had an idealism about love and spirituality even before I could put the two together and describe it in words.
It was present then,
yeah. And then in 1967, when I was working in the music industry in Hollywood, that's when I ran into the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda and began to meditate using Kriya Yoga and those powerful pranayama techniques, which basically change the cellular structure of the brain. But they also are tilted towards the upper chakras of the body,
yes,
and so forth. And, of course, being an organization run by monks and stressing celibacy, you know, you don't look at that side of your nature for a while. But then there came a time when I had to descend. It's like you got blasted into outer space and you circle the earth doing all this meditation, this wonderful, having these wonderful experiences, but then you have to reintegrate, re-enter the earth's atmosphere, and even go down into the unconscious and open all of that up in the light of the wisdom and energy that you've gathered from the higher exploration. And that was when I ran into Jung and his teachings, and a documentary I saw about him and so forth had a profound, profound effect upon me. This was in 1972. And then 15 years later, it suddenly came, oh, you should write a play, because I'd received so much from Jung. I wanted to create some kind of transformational theater that would give people a vicarious experience of that transformational process by living Jung's life with him on stage. So I played 20 different characters, including five women, and it was an amazing experience. 5 years I toured with that play, did over 250 performances, and it doesn't make me a psychologist, but I have to tell you, you can't walk in Carl Jung's shoes for 5 years and not have it rub off on you.
That's a great explanation. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Well, we're going to break for a minute here, but when we come back, we're going to get more into then how you got into sacred sexuality, you know, how you bridged from Carl Jung into sacred sexuality and what you're doing now, because obviously you've blended, you've taken all of this and put it together so that people can really connect the dots. And that's what's so important.
Yes, it's the age of synthesis, and that's what we have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. You are listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers. And today I'm having the greatest conversation with John Maxwell Taylor, who has written a new book called Eros Ascending, The Life-Transforming Power of Sacred Sexuality. I'm talking to John about all of his experience, which comes from being a British rocker, also being a person who not only writes drama, but stars in drama, stars in plays that he's written himself, and who is also very interested in sacred sexuality. We're connecting history, psychology, Hollywood with sacred sexuality. My question for all of you out there is, if you're a woman, or if you know a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, and if you don't have the sexual satisfaction that should happen as naturally as you would like it, I want to tell you a little bit about Zestra. Zestra is a safe and patented blend of botanical oils and extracts, and it's created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes, and the initial sensations are called the Zestra Rush. And the effects tend to peak at around 10 minutes, and Zestra effects can last up to 45 minutes. It can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience, and Zestra is safe, and it comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts fresh and safe from light. I believe that all women deserve sexual satisfaction, or I wouldn't even be doing this show, Sex and Happiness. So please find out more about Zestra by calling 1-877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please say that you heard about Zestra from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness show. We'll be right back.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Laurie Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Laurie Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
Well, we're back with Sex and Happiness, and today I'm interviewing John Maxwell Taylor, who has over 40 years of experience in spiritual self-transformation. And today we're talking about his experience with Paramahansa Yogananda, his experience with Gurdjieff, with Freud, Jung, Master Montauk Chia, people who have been mentioned on this show before, but in different contexts. John has been able to put all of what he's gotten from his study with these various masters and others that he'll mention and put it together in a book called Eros Ascending, The Life-Transforming Power of Sacred Sexuality. So, John, when we left off before, we were talking about how you literally studied meditation techniques and breathing techniques, and your brain changed. You had an experience in the cosmos, but then you needed to come back to Earth. I think that's what you were saying.
That's it in a nutshell, yes.
So you got interested in sacred sexuality. I don't want to cut anything out. I mean, there might be part of the path that, you know, we talked about direct transmission before in the first segment about how you got transmission from meeting someone and hearing a famous guitar player play. And also, I know that you can have direct transmission from a teacher, from somebody who's enlightened in a particular subject or in a particular way without even sitting at their feet or being in their classroom. But it seems like you've had a vast journey.
Yes. Well, I've had a number of profound experiences. The first one, when I went to a lecture about Paramahansa Yogananda's teachings, and within 5 minutes, the whole room had disappeared in light. And the light seemed to be coming from these chrysanthemums that were in front of the lectern where the speaker was. And every time he said the word God or beauty or truth, this light shot out as if it was intoxicated with itself. And it tried to get into my body. It could get into the left half, but it couldn't get into the right half. And this was all new to me, you know. So when the speaker had finished, he left the stage and the light disappeared. So I went up to him afterwards when he was greeting people. I said, you know, the whole time you were talking, the room was filled with light. And what was this? And he looked at me and he says, sometimes God just gives us a little come on, you know. So, I mean, I was mind blown that he's just a little come on. But that changed everything. So I put myself wholeheartedly, this was in 1967, into 5 years of meditation in which I was celibate because, you know, that was what I thought, the Hindu ideal of brahmachari, you know, that you're going to want enlightenment, then you mustn't do that naughty thing because you're going to not get the enlightenment, you know. So anyway, interestingly enough, at the time I got started in the Los Angeles Times gave a review of a book by Omar Garrison about Tantra. And it was the first time I'd ever heard of the possibility that one could be sexual and spiritual at the same time. I can't remember the exact name of this book, but I read it. I didn't really understand it, but I knew that there was a possibility. Later on in my journey, it became imperative for me to reintegrate, to accept my full sexuality again. And at that particular time, I ran into the teachings of Mantak Chia and went to classes with him. And that's the Taoist approach to sexuality. So I took to that like a duck to water, you might say. You know, one of the problems is that doing the kind of pranayama-based yogi techniques where you're doing
breathing,
exercise that bring the sexual energy up to the brain to awaken dormant cellular brain territory, there may not be any sexual arousal involved in that. It's a different kind of process. It can become very fiery for men. Because men are...
Well, it is to using your... here's the thing. I mean, you probably know this, but just for listeners who don't even know what pranayama is...
It was actually through the mouth in that particular...
Oh, you did it through your mouth in that one?
Yeah, okay. Along with the sound and so forth. It's a specific technique. It can tend to
just be too breathy, like your lungs are expanding, and you're taking in more air than you're usually used to. And so,
that certainly could happen. Although I think it was that what was happening to me was on a more subtle level than that. But I needed. Here's the thing: I needed more yin energy to cool everything down because you know you've got yang and you've got yin, you've got fire and you've got water. In order to create consciousness, you need to boil the water, you know, the yin energy. But if you have too much fire, the water will dry up. Oh. And if you have too much water, you can put the fire out, you see.
You know what? You said fiery a little earlier, and I thought you said airy.
Oh, no, fiery. Yes. Well, we're always being accused of being airy-fairy anyway, so, you know.
I know what you were saying. Yes, of course you need the fire to boil some water. You need both elements.
So the Taoist approach allowed me to do that. It got me in touch with the way I could cool down my internal organs and circulate the sexual energy safely through the acupuncture meridians of the body. Because now I've found I've found a way to make love that allowed me to circulate the energy that was arising from the sexual center, cool it down with the heart, and by the time it reached the brain, it's not going to be too explosive, you see. So it was very, very subtle and very, very powerful, and it also turned an Englishman into a fairly reasonable lover. You know, because some wag once said, the English are so emotionally stiff, they make the Germans look like Italians, you know. So does that play? No sex, please, we're British, you know. I'm so grateful. you know, to have been able to discover all of this. And then the other thing is that I also realized, and I don't know how interesting this will be to your listeners, but to me, sex is a means to an end. And the end result is it produces more and more consciousness.
Okay, but that's an end that you have to, it's actually an end that you have to know about.
You have to know about it.
It's kind of like the chicken and the egg. It's yes. Like if you, some people can discover huge consciousness through their sexuality, but they sort of have to know something. They have to know some subtle thing like, whoa, it's not just about a release, or it's not just right. about like yes. sex, like animal yeah. style, sex. But by the other hand, you can also have a goal, or you can have this end in mind if you know about it and you go on a quest for it, you know?
Right. But darling, for me, when I look around the world, I see everybody's looking for that. Everybody is trying to become more conscious. By conscious, I mean freed from the automatism that goes from being run by your past programming, from the patterns in your body that are holding you back from feeling the joy that is the natural state of the atoms form the body that your soul is in.
You feel everybody is looking for this?
I don't think even bad people say, oh, today I will wake up and I will go and be Dr. Evil. You know, I'm going to go around. I think people, they misguided as they may be, they're still looking for happiness. That's the bottom line. They yeah. may think it means I got to go and take over this country or whatever, but it's, you know, the bottom line is that everybody's looking for, the goal of life is a happiness that doesn't grow stale.
Well, you know, it's interesting because after I got involved in what I do in teaching sacred sexuality, which I've been doing myself since 1998, I went to a high school reunion where I hadn't seen some of my high school colleagues for years and years and years, definitely over 20 years. And I remember speaking to a really close friend of mine who had been a close friend of mine then. We hadn't seen each other in all those years. And she said, why do you do what you do? And I said, because it brings people great happiness and joy.
Yes.
And it's given me so much self-awareness and knowledge. I'm so grounded and peaceful
right.
in myself.
Right.
And she said, well, like, what do you do? And I said, well, it involves real expanding exercises. It involves really looking deeply within. It's much more about looking deeply within than it is about techniques of love making per
yes.
se.
Yes.
And she said, I wouldn't want to do that. I
right.
said, why not? And she said, I'd just be too scared.
Yes. And that's the pain, you see. She said,
yeah.
These people are in pain because they're not connected with their souls. And what you just described, Laurie, that's what I mean by consciousness. All those things that you listed that you told her. Just to be conscious of happiness. I'm not talking about, and now I will rule the universe, you know. I'm talking about the feeling of peace within oneself that is accessible anytime, a percolating sense of joy, a happiness that doesn't depend on external circumstances, vibrant health. The ability to be in relationship in a whole way where you're not destroying on the third day what you create in the first two by arguing all the time and getting into these dreadful battles that take place in the arena of human incompatibility. It's such a waste of time. People want to have lasting, loving relationships full of joy and happiness, but they don't know how to connect. And
exactly.
And this is what I'm sure your show is all about, sex and happiness. I mean, you put these two together, that's a totally foreign concept to people in today's society.
It's true. Well,
you're a
you
pioneer
know,
woman.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about that. I mean, I have done many shows on connecting the dots in terms of what are people seeking, et cetera.
Yes.
But I think that you have a slant. You have by connecting the things that you learned about Carl Jung and the various things that he brought to light, like the anima and the animus.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to talk about in our next
Great.
Segment. Like when two people do meet each other and they create something beautiful, loving, there's an attraction, there's a chemistry, there's something really sacred. And then in the third day or whatever, by the seventh month, however long it is, they
right.
start destroying it because they don't know how to be with each other. I think you have a unique perspective on that, John, and I that's
yes.
really where I want to get to. So we're going to break here for a moment. I'm talking today with John Maxwell Taylor, and he's amazing. He's taken a lot of psychology and psychiatry, the Carl Jung, Sigmund Freud connection with combining that with the information from Montauk Chia and also his own personal search. And so when we come back, I'm going to be asking him about what can people who are attracted to each other do to actually find joy, which is the birthright, rather than destroy it because they argue all the time. So we'll be right back.
How would you like to lose up to a pound a day with no exercise required, with no hunger, without being on a restrictive diet for the rest of your life, and no unpleasant side effects? If this appeals to you, you want homeopathic HCG. How do you get that? You go to hormonenurse.com. That's H-O-R-M-O-N-E, nurse.com. There you can find out about HCG and this amazing diet. It's a diet I've used, and I've lost an amazing amount of weight. I'm back to my college size. Plus, you'll find out about hormones, bioidentical hormones. Perhaps you need that too. You need it maybe for sleep, for sexual passion again, your libido. Go to hormonenurse.com.
You're listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers. And today I'm interviewing John Maxwell Taylor. And John, in the last segment, I told you I really wanted to ask you about how you took some of these concepts from Jung and put them together to actually maybe figure out how lovers could stop from destroying what they create. Mm. So, yeah. So tell us a little bit about that. Because I think if anyone wants to know anything, even some people who don't want to particularly be enlightened, so to speak, spiritually enlightened, they want to know how to get along with their partner.
Right. Well, that is a form of enlightenment. If enlightenment isn't practical, then how can you stop from destroying the good that life gives you, you see? To me,
yes.
It's all about day-to-day house management of your body, of your interactions with other people, your career, all of these things. We're not talking about anything airy-fairy here, but there's an energy available to us that is perpetually renewing itself, trying to express itself through our ordinary lives. But we try to drive our ordinary lives forward to the goals that we desire by pushing and straining too much. And so, Taoism is also known as the path of ease, and I like to take it easy. You know, I've been through the Sturm und Drang things, and I don't want to do that anymore. You know, the dramas in my life are all created on stage now. I don't need them in my private life. So one of the things that I learned from Jung and from playing Jung, I see clearly with every woman I talk to. And every man I talk to, I can see there's a dual nature there. Inside every woman, there is a male aspect. And inside every male, there is a female aspect. These are psychological components of the inner world of human beings. Jung called the inner female aspect of man the anima. The woman's inner male, he called the animus. When two people get into an argument, pretty soon, Jung said, people can only converse for 2 minutes when they're arguing before these hidden parts will come out. And when they do, this is when people lose control and they can't find resolution, because the human personality has become possessed by these two archetypal aspects. That's why when you're arguing with someone, part of you is thinking, why am I saying these stupid things and why can't I stop? But it comes out anyway because, in a sense, we've become possessed. The woman becomes possessed by her male side. The man may get possessed by his inner female side and start saying irrational things and so forth. There's a particular language and a particular style that happens when people are possessed by their contrasexual aspect. And I don't like to use that word because it's not really a sexual connotation here. It's an archetypal behavioral thing. For example, when a woman is possessed by her male side, she will often speak to the man in her life with a tone of lamenting reproachfulness. You didn't do what I wanted.
I think I've been there. I think I've done that a few times.
You've let me down. I'm withdrawing my love from you. And it's like the mother saying to the little boy, you've been a bad boy. You didn't eat your peas. You can go to bed and I'm not coming to tuck you in, you know. And the man goes, oh, dear, this dreadful feeling comes up. So then his emotional nature, which is his feminine self, will get activated, and he feels he's falling away from the love that he feels, and he'll start to bluster and make stupid, outrageous statements and so forth. And women hate that. Women hate it when men lose control of themselves like that. A woman, I feel, wants a man to be solid within himself so that she can explore her feelings without him falling out of alignment with himself. This is why women just want men to listen and not right. try to fix things and all that kind of thing. You know, in lovemaking, we want the man to have a nice firm erection so the woman's yin energy can swirl around him, right? So it is in life. The woman wants the man to be firm within himself. Women don't want men to be masters of them. They want men to be masters of themselves.
Exactly.
And one of the things that Gurdjieff said, this is a combination of three different statements of Gurdjieff that I've kind of freely translated because this is what it meant. Modern women fail to achieve their full potential because their men remain children. Because if a man falls easily under that part of his emotional nature, which was not resolved from childhood and so forth, he'll become wild and irrational. The woman says, my God, I thought I'd found a solid guy here. I can't surrender to a love relationship with this person because he's unstable. You know, and at the same time, the man doesn't want the woman saying, you know, you're a bad boy, I'm going to withdraw my love. And also, when women get possessed by their male side, they will speak in absolutist statements that they've picked up from books, from teachers, or other authority figures. Their own wisdom self disappears, and they say, well, on page 359 of the Course in Miracles, it says, bam, right? Or is it 3009 of the Course, page Course in Miracles? But you get the basic idea. Yes,
basically what you're saying is, what you're saying is that people become irrational and they resort to spots in themselves that they don't know they have necessarily. Right. Some people just refer to it as the shadow side, side. Yeah.
Well, it's part of it. Here's a great story about the shadow from my because Emily didn't understand. She said, well, you know, why is it necessary to understand the shadow? She said, I just kind of get it intellectually, but I don't really see how it applies to my life. So we had a talk about it, and she took the dog for a walk. So she's going along the street, wondering, you know, she said to the Holy Spirit, help me to understand this thing about the shadow. She got to the corner of the street, looked down, there's a pile of dog poo, half stepped in. And the light bulb went, and she says, I got it. If you can see it, you don't have to step in it.
Very smart. You just turn the light on.
Yeah. Yeah. But otherwise, what will happen is the shadow gets active usually when there's stuff in that relationship that people don't want to look at. It brings these things to the surface. These dramas arise, so people are forced to deal with that stuff they've not consciously approached. But if the guy can say to himself, look, you know, why do I always get so panicky when she gets like that? Why do my emotions all churn up? And what can I do, you know, about that? So there are tools and techniques by which we can use on ourselves to remain steady in a situation that doesn't seem to be going so well, and actually it's like Aikido. You can convert the energy of that interpersonal relationship, which may possibly be dangerous, into food for the soul and resolution and harmony.
Yes, and that's why people would come to someone like you or read your book. That's why people would come to somebody like me. They would come to other people who are integritists.
Right.
Yogis, people who can actually point them in the direction of how to work with these energies, because ultimately when people do get close with one another, they either do one or the other. They either want to get some capacity to deal with that which is being revealed to them, or they want to stuff it down and suppress it. And
exactly.
And then they become kind of like part of the walking dead.
Yeah.
And the planet does have a lot of those. Yet it's our birthright to see all this stuff. And I think that's precisely why we call relationship into being.
Mm-hmm.
Because we could never look in the mirror. We don't look in the mirror and see all of this.
No.
It's much harder. Maybe it takes many more years. You know, I don't want to go live in a cave for 20 years.
The man cannot see his female self. So he looks for a woman on the outside who reminds him of that hidden part. It says in Shakespeare, Julius Caesar, Cassius says to Brutus, can you see your face? And he says, no, for the eye sees not itself, but by reflection from some other thing. And Cassius says, it is just, and I, your glass, will modestly discover to you that of yourself which you yet know not of. And that's what relationships do. There's a mirror in front of us in which we can see that part of ourselves, the hidden, the man get to experience his inner female by holding, loving, kissing, talking to, relating to the woman he has gotten involved with, who hopefully is a close mirror reflection of that hidden part of himself. And the same with the woman. She wants to have a man in her life who represents externally that inner part of herself which she cannot see. Unfortunately, people pick partners very often who are not mirror images of that aspect of themselves in any sort of close way whatsoever. So it becomes like Cinderella's ugly sister syndrome. Oh, I'll just make it fit. And then that's a ticket. Oh. That's a ticket to a relationship hell, because what Yogananda calls the horrors of human incompatibility. You know, so the more you know yourself and you understand, you can see the workings of your own shadow, you can see what's conscious and what's unconscious within you, and you have a high vision within yourself of the kind of person you want to be with, the kind of love that you want to have, you're going to attract someone who is going to mirror that. If you stay stuck in your dysfunction and won't look at yourself and don't want to grow and change, you're going to find people coming into your life who are going to give you a shaking up.
Well, now I have to let you know, too, though, that not all of my listeners are heterosexual. Well, I just want to say, when you say a man or a woman, so now I just want to make it apply.
Right.
I want to make the masculine feminine apply for people who choose.
It's the same thing. Every human being on this planet has a male side and a female side. Whatever your sexual orientation is, it's the same thing. In homosexual cases, the internal has become more active than the external sometimes, you see. So it's all a question of balance. We're all trying to balance the yin and yang within ourselves. I mean, these are huge areas for individual exploration. The whole planet is growing by leaps and bounds. We are being forced to come to terms with these aspects of ourselves, the male and the female, and balance them. So it's really not a question of sexual orientation. It's a question of polarity. Can you balance the male and female energies within yourself? Because if you can't, the stable charge of energy that ignites your human self with your soul is constantly going to get waylaid, because the polarity and the voltage of the energy flowing between the yin and the yang within you is not constant. You know, if you want to have electricity in your room, you can't be switching it on and off all the time.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for clarifying
good.
That. It was good.
Yeah, I mean, these are big subjects.
Huge subjects, but that's why...
Yay for us for talking about it.
Exactly. That's why we have each other. That's exactly why we have each other.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a short break here for a moment. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some exercises that you would give people.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that people have a takeaway.
Yeah, you got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what we'll talk about when we come back. You're listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and I'm having a great time today with John Maxwell Taylor.
Me too.
And we're talking about, good. We're talking about how the male and female needs to be balanced in each of us, no matter who we are, so we actually can have some joy in our lifetimes. What a concept. So we'll be right back.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Laurie talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Laurie's CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Laurie is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Laurie sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lottie Hound CD by Lori Handlers, go to www.butterflyworkshops.com right now.
This is Sex and Happiness, and I'm Lori Handlers, your host, and today I'm talking with John Maxwell Taylor, who's written a great book, Eros Ascending, The Life-Transforming Power of Sacred Sexuality. And this book won Best Books Award.
USA Best Books.
Beautiful. It's so complete. You have so much in this book that really connects the dots between the psychology and the meditation and the Eastern philosophy and the Western philosophy. It's a really, really well done book, John.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it was said of Gustav Mahler, the composer, said, my symphonies contain the world. I wouldn't say that Eros Ascending contains the world, but it's my attempt to do so. You know, you want to give as much as you can, so it's everything I could possibly put in there to help people is in. It's a very wide-ranging.
Yeah, and it's great. That's why I was so impressed with it.
Entertaining, too, and funny.
Yeah, funny. Great, great humor in it. So my question for you is, someone's listening to the show today, and they want to... Mm-hmm. They want to know where to begin, or let's say they found a partner, but it's just starting to go bad.
Right.
Because that's where most people find themselves, I think.
Yeah, but I understand. It's going to happen with everybody. Because the shadow and the unconscious is going to need to come out so we can deal with this at some point, yes.
Right. And and since we spent all that time, you know, talking about Jung,
yes,
and Freud, et cetera, so now what's something practical. People can,
yeah,
do?
Okay, well, one thing that I've discovered is that the two eyes of a human being, you know, they say the eyes are the windows of the soul.
Yeah.
You know, lovers are always gazing into each other's eyes rapturously in the beginning. I mean, my first date with Emily, we couldn't eat. We were just staring at each other, you know. But one eye of a person represents what I call their essence. It's the gateway to their soul. It's what they were born with. The other eye represents what I call it's the personality eye. It's wired to that part of the brain that's seen everything. It contains the good aspects, the bad, the ugly. So one eye is pure window to the soul. The other is wired to the brain with all its reactions, its hopes, its fears, its dramas, its expectations and everything. If when people start to argue, they lock their heads together, and those two personality eyes wired to the brain with all its stuff get looking at each other, very difficult to stop an argument. But if you look into the essence eye of a person, soul to soul, you can't argue. It's impossible, because that takes you to the part of the individual that is beyond duality. And I'll just give you which that is, because it's different for left-handed and right-handed people. If you are a right-handed person, your essence eye is directly above your heart. It's your left eye. Let's assume you have a partner who is right-handed. If you want a soul gaze of that person, you look from your left eye to their left eye. Both eyes are open, but the gaze is converging like railroad tracks into that. You just soul gaze into the open left eye of that person. It's impossible to argue. What we've done when we've been sort of counseling people from time to time, a couple who are always arguing, I'll have them stand in front of each other, close their eyes, and have them take each other's hands and just stand there. And I'll say, now, when you open your eyes, I want you to look into each other's left eyes and see the person that you first fell in love with. And the minute they do that, peace happens, tears of love come, and then I'll have them close their eyes again and say, now, I want you to look into the right eye, into the personality eye, and see that this person is your best friend, and you extend all the love of your heart to that friend. And then they look right eye to right eye, and immediately, you know, they smile. Then they can't refrain from hugging each other.
Mm.
See?
Sounds lovely. Yeah, really. Sounds like a lovely exercise.
It is a wonderful exercise. I use this whenever I meet anyone for the first time. I always look into their essence eyes. I shake their hand, and they feel like they know me immediately, and they will smile. If a person is left-handed, it's the reversed.
Really?
Yeah. Their essence would be in their right eye. Now, all of this is all laid out in my other book, The Power of I Am, which I've been teaching for, 14, 15 years, these classes. Actually, some of it's based on Aikido. It's how to diffuse conflict, how to get along with people, how to put someone on pause if they're being obnoxious with you without saying a word, how to bring out the best in people. It's very Obi-Wan Kenobi, actually. That's the book that's in four languages
that's
now.
That's great.
I've got fans all over the world who use these techniques, and it is so energy saving, so time consuming. I don't have time to contend with people, Laurie. I'm just too darn happy to be getting into silly arguments based on people's unconscious behavior and so forth. Because when somebody's got a bee in their bonnet and they're taken over by their shadow and their unconscious, they don't want a reasonable answer. They just want you to get on the circuit with them,
yes,
so you dance around in this crazy world. And I won't go there. And it's amazing. I've had, such instant shifts with people.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Another thing people can do, and let's just do this.
Wait. I just want to go back to this for a second. I really do have to check this out with you.
Sure.
This the right eye and the left eye thing. Now, I got to understand from you why it's different with a person who's a lefty. Because it's the right brain that's the creative side of the brain, and lefties just have more connection with that, I thought.
I'll tell you what. We don't need to know this from a rational scientific point of view.
Okay.
What you need to do is to check it out. Stand in front of a mirror and cover up your right eye and look at your left eye. And then, after you've got a fix on what that looks like, shift hands and cover up the left eye and look from your right eye to your right eye in the mirror. You'll see that they're completely different.
Then, yes, I actually get that.
Yeah.
I do get that. And I use that exercise, but I never heard it. What I'm checking out with you is just about people who are left-handed.
So do it with their left. Find a friend who's left-handed and check it out with them. Infallible. It's absolutely infallible. Why? Hey, how do I know? I'm just a rock and roller, I know.
Well, thank you. I'm going to do that. It's a big gift. I have to check that out.
I'll send you a copy of The Power of I Am, because it's a simple book and it's all laid out. It will give you a tremendous sense of self-mastery. And also, wherever you go, I know you do this anyway, but it just opens up even more that platform for people to come get off their stuff and come and relate in harmony with you.
Love it. So now you were going to give another exercise. Thank you so much for that, really. And then you were going to give another exercise.
Yes. Well, here's one to do with the left and the right brain, right?
Okay.
The left brain is constantly active, trying to make sense of our lives. That's its job. It works on a flip-flop, like a seesaw thing, comparing, yes, I should do, shouldn't, no, yes, a flip-flop.
Right.
It's very difficult today for the left brain to make sense of life because it's the age of information and it's being stressed beyond all original intention to make sense of a world that is basically tottering on the edge of insanity, right? George Bernard Shaw once said, the planet Earth is the lunatic asylum of the galaxy, so it's temporary, of course, it's going to get better, but right now things are tough, right? So the left brain will always be making judgments and so forth. When you go into the right brain, that stops immediately. So let's just do a little exercise. You can do it with me now, and your auditors can do it too. If you just close your eyes for a second.
Okay, good. This is what I want.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
put your attention in your left brain.
Okay.
And just get a feel of what that feels like. Maybe a little tight, a little dull, whatever. Just get the feeling of what it's like. Now, shift your attention into the right hemisphere of your brain and see what that feels like. Most people say, feels expansive, more open.
Yeah, much less defined.
Yes, okay.
The other one felt like it was encased and I could feel the boundaries, and the right one feels like kind of... There's no, it's muted. The boundaries are muted.
Boundaries are muted, right. So now come back into the left brain again.
Mm.
And I want you to think of someone you've had a problem with, or maybe someone you have a judgment about or something. Just call up some negative image that maybe, a judgmental kind of framework in your left brain.
Okay.
So you get what that feels like. Now, forget that for a second. Now go over to your right brain again. There's that kind of open, more open feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, call up in your right brain that image that you just had in your left brain of that person or that situation.
Yeah, it doesn't. The feeling is not the same.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. There's no charge on it. No
right.
charge. Okay. You don't care. I mean, you can see it, but you're not getting work. You're not starting to foam at the mouth, right? So now, just very gently, extend that feeling. You've got this positive feeling about that situation in your right brain. Just let it merge over so it fills the left brain as well. Doesn't your left brain feel better about it?
Yeah, it does.
Instant. And you can do this anytime, even in a crowded room. You can do, if you find, my God, this person's a real pain in the neck, you just look away for a second, you just go right brain, mentally to yourself. Just let your energy go over there and then extend it back to the left brain. You look at that person, you don't care. You don't see any of those angles and those things that were bothering you. It takes the charge off it. And then,
that's beautiful.
Isn't it beautiful? Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, then the perfect thing will come into your head to say. We were checking out at Trader Joe's in California, Emily and I, one day. And as we approached the checkout stand, the gal looks up behind the cash register and she sees me coming. She looks up again. And I knew what she was thinking. Oh, he's kind of cute, you know. You either know this stuff, you don't, right? So, but then I could also see and instantly that she was going to try some smart remark. Her male side was going to try and test me, see if she could throw me. So we're checking out and I'm putting stuff in the bag and Emily's paying. And this gal says, you are the muscles and she is the cash. I said, yeah, something like that. She says, looking at us again. She looks at me, she says, beauty and the beast. And I said, oh, that's all right. I've always known I'm beautiful. You know, and she immediately just like the sun just came out from behind this cloud, because I looked her in her essence eye when I said it. And I'd stepped over into my right brain so there was no judgment. And in that place of equilibrium, bang, the perfect thing just drops into your head from your higher intuition to say the perfect thing.
This will save relationships.
Yes, because...
This will save marriages. Yeah. This will save people who are relating to each other, who are arguing and having a difficult time.
Stop in the middle of it and say, let's just soul gaze for a moment. Stand there, hold each other's hands, close your eyes. If you can remember, just go into your right brain for a second. Feel that expansion and then come back into your left brain with that feeling of expanded peace. And then say, okay, let's look into our essence eye. And you just open your eyes and you look, if you're right-handed, left eye to left eye. And you'll see this clarity there. It's like, oh, God, yeah, we've forgotten. I remember McCartney and Lennon apparently were arguing.
And one of them was lefty.
Yeah, and all of a
Paul
sudden,
McCartney.
All of a sudden, in the middle of this argument, Lennon put his hand on McCartney and says, hey, it's only me. You know, it's like, remember who I am?
You know,
we need to remind ourselves who we are by going beyond the words and just going to that place of pure seeing that we talked about in the beginning. Because
it's so simple. It didn't take any big techniques.
No.
It didn't take having to do years in therapy.
No.
It didn't take having to go to a mountain to meditate on the top and come back.
No. And this is what I talked about in the beginning about. This is everyday practical enlightenment. So that you're ruling your life by having power over your reactions and the automatic stuff of the, don't let the left brain run away with you, because it will. You're kind of awake at night thinking, I should have said this, I should have said that. What else should I say tomorrow? I'll send them an email. I'm going to really tell them, you know, rubbish, 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 rubbish. Stop it. That's the difference between being conscious and unconscious. Because if you can't stop that automatic left brain, you are asleep. You can put the brake on that and step into spiritual. That's what we need now, Laurie, spiritual maturity. We need men and women who are in full possession of the faculties, because somebody's got to stand up in this world and be, you know, have their head screwed on right. Otherwise, what's the future going to be?
Yeah. What's the point? Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the reward is great, because you get happiness, you get joy, you get peace. And I also believe you get prosperity, because as you begin to contribute in a meaningful way to becoming what a human being is supposed to be, the earth does support you and it brings its abundance to you. But that's another story.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, John.
My joy. And you can have a good time.
We are having a great time. We've had a great time.
Yeah.
What a wonderful coverage of the history of us, of sexuality, bringing it into modern day to actually heal us.
I enjoy being lovers with you for an hour.
Thank you so
because
much.
That's what it is. It's divine. It's divine love. I've never met you personally, but I feel our spirits have connected over these miles here, and that energy is there for everybody who's heard this today.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today, John. I loved it.
Can we just say, if you want to know more, check out Eros Ascending and the Power of
Am.
JohnMaxwellTaylor.com. JohnMaxwellTaylor.com, ErosAscending.com, and there's videos there too. So
great. And also, please go back a little further and check out The Power of I Am, your other book.
It's on JohnMaxwellTaylor.com. Great.
Wonderful, Lori. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening today to Sex and Happiness. I appreciate you so much. I appreciate my sponsors. Certainly, I appreciate Zestra, and I appreciate Valerie Handlers, my sister, and Life Wave Patches for people and pets, getting you out of pain, helping you sleep, giving you all the things you need in an easy way. Tune in next time when I'll be speaking to Krishna Prem, the original devotee of Osho. He'll be talking about his new book, and he'll be talking about how Osho sent him back to the United States to tell people about the Bhagwan. So we'll see you next time. This is all for Sex and Happiness.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make-